Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob off today. Mark Maskey of the Washington Post. And by the way, we have the big boy, Mark Cabali, on video here. Go to our YouTube channel and check it out. Get there through our website at 937thefan.com. The NFL's Jeff Miller, according to Maskey, declined to comment on whether the league will take any action against Jim Harbaugh following the 10-year show cause order imposed by the NCAA. Big boy, the chances of the NFL taking action against Jim Harbaugh are about as good of a chance as Gertie passing up the buffet line. That ain't going to happen.
I don't think it should happen either. I mean,
neither do I. This guy over here to my left does. Limits wants that the NFL.
Hell yeah, I do.
He wants the NFL to suspend Harbaugh.
No, here we go again with the narratives. We're going to say, oh, the Penn State bias is coming out here. Austin can't possibly put together a truly constructed thought without including Penn State in it.
Yeah, speaking of that, Joe, did you happen to see when Limits was talking to the McKeesport running back? I never saw a guy have a bigger smile on his face in his life because he thought he's committed to Penn State, even though that might not happen.
Yeah, he's gonna.
Saw that.
Did you broker that deal, Limits? Are you involved in recruiting now? Did you get the kid to go to Penn State?
I did not. No, this was a year ago that he committed.
All right. You gotta get on the horn.
You know, Mark, you gotta make sure that you create a good relationship with some of the people that you're interviewing. You wanna, you know, ask some good questions and see what the answers are gonna be. You wanna have a good connection there.
You're like, hey, what about this play here? Then you're like, hey, what do you think about Penn State and this offense and these running backs? I'm like, wow, Limits, we pivoted real quickly to Penn State now.
Because he brought up Saquon Barkley, so I thought that was a good transition point.
Yeah, big boy. Tell me on what planet the NFL would have grounds to suspend Harbaugh. He worked in a completely different...
Yes.
Really, a completely different vocation. College football coaching compared to NFL coaching, a different planet. He might as well be a dentist. If he went and became a dentist, would they suspend his license for what happened at Michigan? I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, to put it on a separate level, it's like if you got in trouble working at Giant Eagle, and that means you then left and went to Shop and Save, but then you couldn't work at Shop and Save because Giant Eagle didn't want you to imposing something on you there. It's just two separate entities in my book. Even though you take players from one to the other one, it's sort of a feeding system. It's still one's college football, one's pro football. They've been doing this for years. You're going to go back retroactive and get Pete Carroll too then? I mean, can we
limits,
do that?
Limits, defend yourself and make your case here.
So my point on this, Cabali, is we see this happen with players a lot when whether they go on to the NFL or they graduate and then they go to the league and they have an ongoing legal issue or something else that had occurred, whether it be on the field or off the field, it doesn't matter that it occurred in college. They still get punished for the NFL. I took the Isaiah Bond example as the NFL still might end up, you know, laying a little bit of the hammer down on him based on what happened when he was still in college. Why are we making an exception for coaches?
Limits.
Why should Jim Harbaugh be able to basically leave college football and basically get a free pass as a way to escape? Like, why is he just allowed
to
get off scot-free?
You understand that legal issues fall under a personal conduct policy no matter where they may have committed a crime,
right? Yes, I do.
That's different than having a guy in a mustache take Ohio State signals,
I know. Yes, I know you brought up the mustache idea a lot.
I don't think that falls under personal conduct policy.
Cabali, your thoughts? And I wasn't
What are your thoughts?
Oh, I wasn't trying to frame it at all in that way.
Yes. Trying to frame it in that way.
I know. I'm not. He broke the rules of football.
And you equate that to a crime in the real world.
Again, that's putting words in my mouth. What I'm saying is college football and the NFL, the lines are being blurred now more than ever before. So I don't understand why Harbaugh, because of what he did in college, basically just gets to leave and there's no ramifications of it at all. The Jim Tressel stuff I point to, where he was punished by the Colts for what had happened at Ohio State. Sure, he was just an advisor. Why should it be treated any differently as an advisor compared to a head coach? That's just my point.
But you understand that the NFL is punishing players who may have committed crimes under the personal conduct policy. That has nothing to do with college and pros.
Did not dispute that at all.
He could have done it. He could have done it anywhere. It doesn't matter that the guy did it in college.
Mark?
Well, we all know what's going on here. If this was Jim Harbaugh who coached for Stanford, I don't think limits would care. It's just because he coached for Michigan and whips Penn State. That's the only reason why. I mean, we're going through all this big to-do, and that's the bottom line. That is where his anger comes from, right, Limits?
No.
Yes,
not at all. You can claim that it's that and think it's that, but it's not. So I'm not going to defend it anymore.
He's not going to defend it anymore, big boy. Shall we move on?
Move on to Marquez Valdes-Scantling signing with the 49ers.
He's off the board. It's on the Twitter machine.
Oh, really? Who has that?
According to Ari Miroff, My Sports Update is breaking it. The 49ers are signing Valdes-Scantling.
All right. Well, there we go. I thought
that was
that.
Can we rewind and take that part out of the show, Joe?
No, it was very legitimate, and I thought it was actually going to happen because it made a lot of sense. So who's next then?
Ask Bill Goldberg. I don't know. They're running out of options, right?
I mean, are there or aren't there? You said they wouldn't trade or couldn't trade for Jacoby Myers. How about Alec Pierce, somebody like that?
The only way they would trade for Jacoby Myers is it's a two-street road here, or whatever. Two-pronged plug here with him. First of all, the Raiders have to want to trade him. I'm not 100% sure that's the case. And they're going to have to eat some of that $11 million. Now, if Omar can do his con artist wizardry and, you know, try to get them to agree to a trade and take half that money and pay for it themselves, then yes, it's all on here. But I don't anticipate that that's even a possibility as we say right now. So I don't know who's out there left. I mean, there has to be somebody. But like I said earlier, I don't anticipate a big name at all coming here, and you're going to be disappointed.
I'm not going to be disappointed. I don't care. Here's some breaking news. Yeah, I hear you. All-pro safety Kyle Hamilton and the Ravens reached an agreement today, according to Adam Schefter. 4 years, $100.4 million, the largest for a safety in history. $82 million guaranteed. What do you think about that?
They didn't look at Minkah Fitzpatrick, and how much did the Steelers give him? He's very good. I'm not denying that he's very good, but I think it's almost to the point where that's a position that you can scheme out of doing well, or at least we saw that in Pittsburgh with Fitzpatrick. I don't know if that's going to end up paying off in the end, but he's a good player.
Are the Ravens the best team in the division?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the Steelers are next. I think the Bengals are after that. Then we know where the Browns are.
What do you think of that situation? The quarterback situation there. Who's gonna start the most games for them, and will Shador start any?
Oh, I think Shador will. I mean, Flacco will be a starter for a good half the season until, you know, there's no use having Flacco being a starter if they're 0-8. You know, you might as well move on to next year and see what you got in Sanders or Gabriel. But doesn't he have to skip over Gabriel just to get in the game? So maybe Sanders doesn't play at all, but one of those will play. It won't be early, but maybe they could trade him Skylar Thompson in October.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the Fan will showcase a different community each Saturday through the Youth Football Showcase with a special visit from members of the Fan staff. If you want 93.7 The Fan to visit your game, email usports@937thefan.com with your group name, your group's main contact info, and potential dates. Details at 93.7thefan.com. Now brought to you by Steel City Shredding, Saloni's Italian Bread, and Pelman Electric. Did you have a good youth football career, big boy? What position did you play out in McKeesport?
Yeah, I was at McKeesport.
Where were you?
Come on. I was at, I actually played for the Bell Vernon Midget Football League, and I played for the Linwood Eagles.
The Linwood Eagles?
Yes.
What position?
If you had to guess, Joe, what would it be?
Limits, you think he was an offensive tackle, maybe? Center?
Maybe a guard.
Maybe a guard. Yeah, we'll go with guard.
I was tackle.
Any good?
Nose. As I forget who called him. Mike Tomlin called it nose guard.
Yeah.
Now it's nose tackle, right? Any good? Not no. No, probably not. I would say no. Much better baseball player at that age.
Did you have Eagles colors, green and white?
We were green and gold.
Wow. I can imagine a little big boy out there, can't you, Limits? Very excited.
A little big boy?
Very excited for the game.
There was nothing little about me. I was a kicker one time. I was a kicker in the All-Star game. I was a kicker in the All-Star game, and I went and kicked off, and I like swung and almost totally missed the ball, and it went like 3 yards. Very embarrassing.
I just wanted to have him laugh for a while. Limits,
How far can you kick a field goal, Joe, right now?
I've tried it. Probably 25 yards. Limits, how far could you kick one?
I don't think you can kick a 25-yard field goal.
I guarantee you can kick a 25-yard field goal.
No, I want to see it.
Wait, what? I was being conservative. A 25-yard field goal? You can't?
I don't think you can.
There ain't no doubt he can do that.
That's from the 15-yard line, am I right?
That's like an extra point, an old extra point.
Wait
Absolutely
a second.
You can do that.
Of course I can do that, right?
Of course.
He doesn't think I – and you don't think I can, Limits.
I don't, no.
Oh, Kabali, I thought you were saying I can't. Yeah, I can go 25.
I said you can, Joe.
Oh,
Austin's saying you can't.
I thought you said that Joe could not, Mark.
No, right. Joe can absolutely kick a 25-yard field.
Limits, let's go out to a field. When? Tomorrow?
Maybe, yes.
All right. We'll see if you can kick the further field goal.
It won't be me. I can't kick.
Oh. All right. Then won't be much of a challenge.
He can hit a wiffle ball.
I can do that, you know, yes, but I can't kick the football.
He can put together a really good wiffle ball lineup.
He's winning titles in wiffle ball.
Yep.
Limits, Kabali's coming after you today. You going to go after him at all?
No, I think Kabali's had enough punishment with his Cameron Johnson opinion.
we'll just
leave it at that.
He did come after you in the end.
We will blame that on one Andrew Filipponi and his lack of accurate tweeting that came down on me hard.
Wait, but didn't you say adamantly that Cam Johnson would be the guy?
I thought Cam Johnson was the guy. It came across as sources told me that organization made up their decision before, which that's not the case. I still think Cam Johnson's a better punter, so there you go.
What do you make of this, Limits?
I'm
you want to take
to
another
him.
Shot at him here?
No.
That suffices?
I'll leave it at that.
I think he's a better punter. I think age and dead money and stuff like that played a little part in it. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it.
And I respect that. All right. Of all the position groups, let's leave quarterback out of this for now. Of all the other position groups on this whole roster, which one concerns you the most? Is it receivers? Is it O-line? What is it?
Probably D-line right now as we sit there, because we don't know what Harmon can – how long is he going to be out for. Is Cam Hayward going to show up? I would assume he is. I mean, I don't think there's much worry about that. Benton's a little banged up. Then you got Y.A. Black, who looked good in preseason, but – can we guarantee he's going to be any good during the regular season or more than, 15 or 18 snaps? Then what do you have behind that? Milk, Lee, Ekwale. So I think defensive line is a somewhat of a problem, and I don't think there's anybody out there that you're going to bring in now in waiver wire or whatever to fill that, to make it better. So, yeah, I think defensive line is the biggest concern for me.
What's Benton's situation? He was banged up a little bit, but bigger than that, is he the type of player that they need in the middle of that line? Meaning, is he more of a guy who ties up blocks, or is he a guy who wants to be a playmaker? Because it's real hard to be both of those things, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they really ask him to tie up blocks as much anymore on this defense, rather than get to the quarterback, you know, tackle the running back as you get to the quarterback, try to keep him off of there. But I don't, you know, the old school Steelers, that was what they did, you know, with their two gap set. They're just trying to keep him off their linebackers. It's not what this defensive line does. So I think when you look at the run game against last year and they struggled, and you point to the defensive line, and that was an issue, but it's more than it was more than just that.
Yeah.
I mean, the inside linebackers got a tackle. I mean, Patrick Queen had 130 tackles, but would that surprise you if I told you right now that Patrick Queen had 130 tackles last year? A little surprising, because it didn't look like he made a lot of big plays.
How many of them? How many of them were at least 5 yards down the field? Would be my next question.
Exactly. I mean, at one time, I forget who it was. It was about 5-10 years ago. A Steelers cornerback had like 18 tackles. Yeah, because he gave up about 14 catches. That's why. You know, so that's that same realm of it's the same box right there. But I think Peyton Wilson's a lot better. I think they'll be able to use Cole Holcomb in situations. And I think, how good Minkah Fitzpatrick was. He wasn't that sure of a tackler late last year as well. So they're going to need the group effort to stop the running game. It's just not the defensive line. But the defensive line is somewhat concerning to me.
Well, speaking of that, and lastly, I might add, is the Cam Hayward story just going to quietly peter out here? Is there any more drama left, and is he going to get a sweetener to his contract?
I mean, my point is, he doesn't go out there and practice the other day, it was a week ago, without something, right? I mean, you just don't go out there because you feel like taking part in some team drills for the first time in a month because of the heck of it, on the whim. But he hasn't been even – I don't even know if he's been dressed since then and take part in any practices since then. This is the weirdest demand for a contract renegotiation in my life. It's like he's trying to appease both sides. He's trying to get his money, but I think he now realizes he can't be vocal about it because the pushback he got. I still think it happens. He'll get a couple bucks and everything will be fine. I mean, that might be 10 days from now, but could be 10 minutes from now. But I don't think they let him go into the season without giving him a raise. I just don't.
Thank you, big boy.
All right, fellas. You two resume your fighting.
You two are fighting. You two were the ones who got in. Are you two okay? Limits, you okay with that?
Should I say boom? Is that what it was?
We're going to bring back the boom. You know the funny thing about that is? Listen to this. I really found this interesting. In a game one of our championship game, one of our guys hit a big home run, and I went, boom, boom, let's go. And I immediately thought, oh, the boom. It got me in trouble with Joe. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Are you two okay is the question, though.
Oh, we're wonderful.
I don't want to leave on
bad
terms.
Hey, Joe, what are you? Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Did you see my nice tweet about Joe last night, Kabali?
Did Limits get you a present?
No, but Bob did. He got me a new golf hat and a whole sleeve of golf balls.
Bob and I combined on the present.
You did?
I said to Bob, what can we get for Joe? And he says, I have some stuff.
Oh, well, yeah.
I'll put my name on it.
Yeah, put my name on the card. Thank you, big boy.
Pretty much. Thanks, Mark.
All right, Joe. All right,
see you, buddy. Boss.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Mitch Keller pitched well. Dan Zangrilli in-house here, and I was trying to think what the heck happened in the Pirate game last night. And then it all came rushing back to me, Dan, was Mitch Keller. And I think he's, and you know Dan, of course, from pre and post and all things Pirates, play-by-play now and again. Did a great job on that.
Oh, thanks.
He's important down the stretch. Not only can he reverse his August-September struggles, but if they're thinking about trading him, it sure would be nice if he finished with a flourish as well. So that was good to see last night. That was the Mitch Keller we've seen for a lot of this season. I was, and still am to some degree, a little bit worried that he would again lack a finishing kick, but that was the guy. Plus, you can project him maybe ahead to next year's rotation, which could be a hell of a rotation.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I guess, what are you asking about? You know,
I don't know. Wasn't even a question. It was all observations.
No, and yet, so let's start with the Keller part.
Yeah.
The 9 strikeouts, use of the 4-seam fastball. I think it was a much different pitch mix, and it was an important outing to maybe take a step in reversing what has turned out to be, it's a trend, it's a thing, it's a cause for concern, what the second half looks like, right? There's so many starts,
yeah,
basically 3 years worth, so... Where I've gone on my shows, my thought process is, okay, let's say that they find themselves in a position next year in a competitive spot during the second half, and then a guy who otherwise is just easily walking through April, May, June, July, post All-Star break, that's okay when we're talking hopefully, maybe, about meaningful games in August. It's almost, remember the Charlie Morton scenario, you can always not count on him. Like Morton was very good, dynamic, electric stuff, ground chuck at times, and he would carry you for different spurts. But when it was time to really pay the rent in those meaningful games, you know, there would be a Morton meltdown at times. And I think that would be a concern, right, based on the body of work for Keller. Did he do a good job, I think, in taking a meaningful step in reversing that last night? Sure. Now, it's just one start out of a much larger sample size of concerns that he has to address. But if he replicates something similar, or at least if he's the guy, 6 innings, 2 runs, basically that walking, talking quality start that he's been the rest of the way, okay. I think he's checked maybe the very last box that I think he needs to check surrounding any question marks, because we know what he is, who he is, what he's about. That's the one little objective that you would have on Mitch Keller. And I think if he could do that, all right, then we're good.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a big one, because
no doubt,
if they ever are any good and he's still here, you got to be able to, he
sure
can't finish seasons.
No.
August and September, it's been horrifying. Do you think he will be in the rotation next year? Or you think they'll trade him?
Better question.
Thank you.
Better. I wasn't saying it from an on-air live critiquing standpoint.
It was actually a question, yes.
But it's what is the budget for free agency? And you have to be able to infuse offense here. And there might only be one way to do that. And let's be real about that. Could the dollars be used in a much more offensive way? Very true. If he's not in the equation, you've offloaded money through trades. Perhaps there's a nominal increase in budget. So you've freed up a ton of dollars with the trade of Keller, with the trade of what you've done in offloading money through the deadline, assuming that there's any sort of increase in budget. Okay, now you have a nice pool to try to go solve your offensive issues. Now, taking Keller out of that is a big, big hole that you leave in the rotation, and you're entrusting your young, promising arms. Are they surefire things? Do you feel confident as well as he's pitched in Braxton Ashcraft? Do you feel as confident as well as he's pitched in Mike Burrows? Do you throw all those chips in your young, inexperienced arms? Sure, Bubba Chandler, Blue Doors, came out of the sky here and gets everybody excited. But they're young and unproven. To trade away a surefire thing, that takes a lot of you-know-what. But
he's only a surefire thing for 4 months per season.
Correct. But then again, that's why I think that these starts moving forward are meaningful and important. And if he pitches like this, well, man, if he overcomes those second half objections with, what does he have, 4 or 5 more starts? I don't know, 6 yeah. maybe more starts. Then you've got a good question on your hands. To answer, is he here in the rotation next year? I would probably say no. You're probably looking to actively move him. I think a lot of contenders would like what he can bring the first half. You get money off the books. You hopefully get some good offensive value in return from the player, right? Maybe you get an offensive piece plus the money.
Yes.
And then you throw that at the dollars. Right. It's very tempting to not try to flip that.
Dan Zangrilli joining me here. Listen to the Pomp and Joe Show on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dan is essentially, he's in studio, but he's on the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And the 50-minute mark brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19, Peters Township. So, as livid as people get with the Pirates, and as much as I defend those people, of course, I'd be livid too if I was a million years into the latest rebuild. I couldn't watch Saturday and Sunday, Chandler and Skeens back to back, whatever days those were, and not think ahead to what could be. I couldn't.
Sure.
And I wrote today in the Post Gazette, and I believe it, and I've been saying it anyway all year, is when you have starting pitching like that, it's not just them either. I can see Oviedo in the rotation. I could see Ashcraft, Barco's on his way. You want to keep Keller, whatever. They're going to have a really, really good rotation, I think. Electric at the top.
Sure.
You've done the hard part. You've done the hard part. So why can't this GM do the easy part? Somebody has to this offseason. I think when you have great pitching, it's akin to great quarterbacking in the NFL. By any estimation, you're close because you've done the thing that so many people can't do. You have it. So please, do the other part. I think they're pretty close, and yet so far, I think they need 3 bats.
It's, yes, bullseye. They need to be coming internally first. You supplement in free agency, so they're not doing item A, so they're going to have to try to do item B. I don't know what is out there. Offense is obviously at a premium because pitching is so far ahead everywhere, not just in the Pirates organization. And when you say it's the easy part, I think it's actually, in some respects, the harder part.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, from where we're sitting at, where we're living right now in the game, it's the harder part. Pitching is still, I think, much harder to acquire, develop, accumulate that depth. That's a harder part. But apparently scoring 4 runs is much more difficult. We see a lot of other clubs that are struggling, downtrodden on these long offensive droughts and spurts. You see a guy hitting 230 and 240, and you go, okay, not so bad. I mean, the OPS has been adjusted to like, all right, 700 is actually pretty average or above. That's acceptable. Whereas 900 was almost the norm. It wasn't all that obscene a thought to see everybody up over, you know, the real superstars in the high 900s, low 1000s. So offense is much harder to source than it's ever been. And they haven't done much of anything in the way of developing it. So, yeah, you've got to get some real shrewd acquisitions, whether it's through trade. That's where the Keller situation becomes awfully interesting. And you've got to be able to find some protection because you say 3 bats away. I think it's that minimum. Joe.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Well, here's my thinking, and Limits and I talked about it. You're not going to change the whole roster. So see if you agree. Position by position, just real quick, just agree or no, and then we can talk about it. You're going to have to live with Horwitz at first and Gonzalez at second, even though Gonzalez isn't a great defensive player, doesn't have a ton of power, and Horwitz doesn't have a ton of power. Agreed?
agree on Horowitz, why can't Gonzalez be a third baseman?
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Could. And then who's your second baseman?
Easier to source in the market or through trade, I think, a second baseman than it is a third baseman.
But then you have a third baseman. He's not a good defensive second baseman. Will he be a good defender at third? And he doesn't hit for a lot of power.
I think it's more of an offensive position, and I think I'm more of a believer on Nick Gonzalez and his offensive trajectory that I would be willing to, as opposed to try to find a third baseman, move an average offensive piece there with hopeful upside that it gets better, and then turn my attention to the acquisition of a second baseman.
All right. Okay, that's fair. Either way, you live with Horowitz, you live with Gonzalez. They're good and they're bad.
And it's semantics there, sorry.
No, that was good. You live with your catchers. The kid they picked up, Flores, from the Yankees, is doing well in AAA, but so did Henry Davis. You're going to live with some combination of Davis, Flores, and Endy. I don't know what happens to Joey Bart. Agreed?
Yes.
You're going to live with you had more there.
Well, I do wonder if there's maybe an off-season acquisition at catcher
and how
sold you are on Davis.
I mean, I'm not really. But
right.
Like I said, you can't. Are you going to bring in somebody who's better than that combo of three guys?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
At some point, don't you have to play them? And find
you
out?
You do.
Point, so,
okay.
Maybe.
I'll concede that. Yep. I'll concede that. Sorry.
No. Some no sorries here. This is all good. It's good talk. Reynolds, I think, will get back to being the guy he is. You throw out his great season and his crap season, which is this season. He's a good hitter.
He's been really good the last 40 games. He almost has as much extra base hit his last 35, 36 games than he did his first 91. So, to me, I think he's returned to form post All-Star break.
So, you live with him?
Yep.
You obviously live with Cruz. You hope he gets better, takes that giant step we're waiting for. And then you live with, I don't know, Triolo at short. You're waiting on Connor Griffin. So you live with whatever that is. That leaves left field, an infielder, either third or second, and a DH, which gets me to Kutch. And I think it's time, I really do, to upgrade at that position.
Or maybe it's a outfielder, first base, right-handed combo guy that can platoon with Horowitz.
Sure.
And then I think McCutcheon is actually, if it's a year for $5 million, I don't think he's in anybody's way.
Well, I'd like him to be. You don't want an upgrade there? He's not hitting for a ton of power anymore.
But
he's hitting 230 something.
I'm not there yet, because I think if there's an ABS system, I think the on base is going to very much increase, because he has better strike zone awareness than the computer itself. I think that.
But at this stage of his career, how much does he help you on the bases? You know what I mean?
I mean, he has a better OPS than O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah. Is that a compliment or an insult?
No, I mean, it's a backhanded compliment. So I'm not trying to jettison him for a number of reasons, and I'm sure it's half sentimental. And I also think he can be a productive guy. He should not be hitting second. He should not be relied upon. But if we're talking about, and we're going around it, you need a left fielder. I think you need a corner outfielder, we'll call it. I think you need an outfield first baseman, right-handed guy.
Yeah.
Because Horowitz can't hit left-handers. I think you need a second baseman. So those are the three bats. McCutcheon for $5 million, roll it back. Right? Roll it back.
As your everyday DH?
Not the everyday guy, but...
But he can't play a position either.
Sure.
He can't play the field anymore.
But I think that there's still very much productive plate appearances in there that he justifies. I don't think that this is a ceremonial thing where he's justifying his existence. The production that he's given you this year, assuming that he can replicate it next year, while it shouldn't be second or fifth, he should be hitting sixth or seventh, I think that it is very much adequate production that is undervalued, production that you're would want to have in your lineup, and you could do so very much on the cheap. I look at those as solutions and reasons to bring him back, because where else are you getting the $5 million? The production that he's given the last 3 years, the Pirates have gotten that for $5 million each year. You're getting that nowhere else. I don't want to dismiss the production. It's pretty good.
But 2 years ago, he had a 776 OPS. That's down by like 60 points. And then you're assuming...
What does he have, the second or third highest OPS on the team?
Again, is that an insult or a compliment?
It's a backhanded compliment, but he
I'm looking
he
to
fits.
Upgrade on a guy whose only job is to hit. He has 12 home runs and 400 at-bats. I want somebody who can hit 25. I mean, I mentioned all the guys you have to live with, but they have to go out and get big upgrades. They got to spend money. They got to trade a young arm or a Keller and get somebody in here who gives this lineup juice.
And I think you get that in the other three acquisitions. He's not going to be a major acquisition, but to me, he's not in anybody's way until he is.
Well, I want him to be in somebody's way.
I need
a designated hitter. Who hits for power?
I don't think you need the DH. You need a corner outfield spot. You need an outfield first base combo. You need a second baseman.
I don't care where
it's
the bat comes from.
Sure, but
he could be a pitcher. If Skeens can hit, put him in the, I don't know, anything.
I'm looking to see Andrew McCutchen in the lineup in 2026 some way, somehow. Obviously, in a much more complimentary way, he needs to be the centerpiece of the offense, not in the, he needs to be our third, what is he, second, third highest OPS on the team? No way. But the 700 OPS, the on base, the hard out, the good, how many pitches does he see? He mattered. Like, there is a meritocracy argument to be made that he can lengthen your lineup and make you better. Sure, are there limitations? Do you have to move some pieces around? No doubt. But on his own merits, I find relevance for him in the Pirates 2026 lineup. I do. Luke, and if you're going to talk about the ABS system being in place or a challenge element in place, what do those numbers then look like? Probably even better because of the manner in which he takes at bats. They're a work of art, Joe. He knows the strike zone better than even the best
umpire. He's hitting 241?
In this day and age?
241?
Yes, not bad. In this day and age, let's circle back to the conversation that we had here 10 minutes ago. Adjusting our prism. A 700 OPS, that's not too bad. A 240 average, that's not too bad in this day and age. Gone are the days of the 280 hitters. I believe, check me on this, the league leading hitter in the National League is under 300. That's the way it was for the majority of the year. Who's leading the National League in hitting? They're hitting under 300. Gone are the days of the 330 hitters. We need to adjust probably by 100 to 150 points on the OPS as to what is good, and we probably need to adjust 40 points on the batting average. Yep. Austin?
Freddie Freeman's at 302, and then right. Trey Turner, 298 are the top two.
Bingo. And what are the OPSs? Look up and down at the top 10, 15 OPSs. This goes back to offense being harder to source, pitching being much further ahead than hitters just league-wide. And
yeah, we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, I can find eight guys in Milwaukee's lineup who are better hitters than Andrew McCutchen, if OPS is your measurement.
And
that's a similarly sized market. He has 12 home runs,
but Andrew McCutchen,
and 400 at-bats.
Andrew McCutchen.
Plus you're assuming that that at age 39, what you consider to be a good year is going to continue.
No doubt. There's always that risk, but I think there's a track record of he is who he is, and this is what it's going to be over the last three seasons. And I understand what you're saying about Milwaukee, but Pat Murphy would take Andrew McCutchen. And Andrew McCutchen today could find his way into the Milwaukee Brewers lineup.
I disagree.
Or on that roster.
You don't think that Andrew McCutchen came back here this season in large part because he wasn't wanted anywhere else?
No, I bet you he could find work if he wanted to.
Again,
we're talking
about a guy who can't run anymore, who doesn't play the field.
Correct.
And who doesn't have really that much power anymore and is hitting 241. But you say 241 is good, but
I say it's not like the 241 of 10 years ago is what I'm saying.
I'll agree with that, but it's
so it's probably like almost 275 from 10 years ago. So, does that change your prism and your outlook on him?
No.
Well, you're looking for every reason to jettison him. I'm looking for reasons where I think that there is definitely a way to keep him on, where he is a solution, not the solution, a solution. Again,
he's 63rd in the league in hitting at 241 with Key Brian Hayes right behind him. That's not where I want to be.
In just general batting average?
That's batting average.
Okay.
Yes.
And then in OPS, he's very average player.
Right. An average player who can't run anymore and can't play the field. I'm not looking to denigrate McCutcheon. I'm looking to upgrade at DH. I want like a thumper by any means necessary. The guy whose only job is to hit, I want him to be a thumper.
I think you can find thumpers in those other three positions and then find a way to keep him in the mix. And for $5 million, let's talk about production for actual dollars. For a cash-strapped organization on a budget, he actually does fit. Again, should be hitting sixth or seventh, maybe playing 4 to 5 days a week. I think that there's a place for it. I think that, again, with the ABS system, he can lengthen your lineup, sees a lot of pitches. There's a very professional quality at bat. He's a very tough out, I believe.
Okay. We're going to disagree
on
that.
And then put on top of that, to maybe tip the scales, everything else. The guy's going to have his number retired. He wants to play year.
That kind of stuff I don't care about anymore.
I do.
It's time to win.
Temporary. I mean, that's all temporary. I mean, for 1 year, you're going to blow up, I think, a legacy, a career.
They've given him three extra years here.
They have.
He's a 0.3 WAR player right now.
Do you think
now.
He should retire?
He can do whatever he wants.
But what do you think? Do you think he has no value whatsoever?
No, I think he's okay.
Okay, so
But you need to upgrade at that position. I don't think there's any question about that. By the way, he struck out. You say he gives you these high-quality, great at-bats. In 398 at-bats, he struck out 100 times, and he only has 12 homers.
What's the strikeout?
His on-base is...
What's the K rate?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't have that in front of me.
I mean, that's what you look at versus then the on-base, and the on-base is good enough. I don't know. I'm looking for ways to say yes, not every other reason... To say, no, this isn't going to work. And again, my theory is he's not in the way until he's in the way. And I think that there's probably three or four more things that the Pirates have to address that then brings the conversation that you're having here and the argument that you're making really onto the table as a relevant one. It's irrelevant until they address three other issues, until they create a culture of meritocracy. Until then, when he's not in the lineup, it's like, oh my gosh, where's Andrew McCutcheon? Yes, those conversations should not be occurring.
I mean, he hit like 130 in August or in July, didn't he?
It's the least of their problems. He's the least of their problems right now.
I think DH is among the biggest of their issues to address. They need a hitter. They need a thumper in their lineup.
No doubt.
And they don't call it designated hitter for nothing. He's okay. And I love Kutch as much as the next person. At some point, you got to say goodbye. This seems like a good point because again, he's also going to be 39.
Correct. And the conversation becomes one when it becomes one. And it's not a conversation yet. Make it a conversation. There is no conversation to be had here. He's the least of their problems. He's one of their solutions.
I see. That's where I disagree. He is not a solution.
So then make him a non-factor. Until then, he's a factor, Joe.
Right.
Come on.
For a team that's a million games under 500.
100%.
Who can't play the field and can't run.
And even with the three additions, you could probably find a place for him. And I would.
All right.
That's where we're at. I'm dying on this hill.
Clearly. All right. I respect that. I do. All right, Dan. I'm trying to think of anything else to address. Oh, Connor Griffin. When is he going to be here?
I mean, I told the guys I could see a pathway, assuming that he lights everything up in double A as he did in the two single A levels. I would love to see him get an opportunity if the stars align to get the final week in triple A. The triple A schedule ends a week later than double A's schedule. If El Tuna doesn't make the playoffs, Joe, send him to triple A. Don't just send him home if the curve do not make the playoffs, right? If El Tuna does, then I think you keep him in double A. You give him the postseason experience. And
right.
I don't think it's an obscene thought to see a Jared Jones situation where he breaks camp with the Pirates next year. I don't. People will disagree.
You said who?
I think Connor Griffin.
Connor, I thought you said Jared Jones.
It's a Jared Jones situation.
Oh, that situation.
Very
where
similar.
He breaks camp.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't think that's obscene. It's that's it's not impossible. I'm not going to dismiss it. This is a special guy. Yeah, he's only going to be 19 years old, but I mean, you look at all the other really good ones, and he apparently is a very, very good one. He'll tell you, right, Griffin, at least through his performance, as to whether he's not going to do it. He's not going to be able to do it. I think that there's a shot. Not that the Pirates are going to rush him. They need to, but try it. Why not? Look for every reason to do it as opposed to the reasons not to do it.
Man, I think it'd be great. All right, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan Zangrilli, are you on pregame today, I'm assuming?
Yep.
And postgame?
Yep.
All right, we'll be listening.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.